We're having a special class on the segments of tefillah, the order that our sages established, and we will analyze it from a Ashkenazi halachic perspective. There is a Sfardi or Kabbalistic perspective, which discusses Kabbalistic concepts of the order of tefillah. I don't know it, so I can't teach it. So we're going to focus on the basic halachic perspective on tefillah. In a nutshell, we begin the morning, we thank Hashem for having life. Modani lefanecha. Notice, by the way, there's a very nice point that Rav Kook points out in his commentary on prayer. What do you say? Thank do I. Why don't you say, I thank? You could have began the morning with, Ani modeh, I thank you, Hashem, for giving me life. No. Our sages want us to open our eyes without the word I. Don't begin your day with saying I. Even though you're saying, I thank. No. Begin with thank does I. Begin with thank. Begin with modeh. Don't begin with a capital I. Okay? Modeh ani lefanecha. We begin our day, we open our eyes, we thank Hashem for giving us life. We go and wash our hands, because during the night, invariably, we touched different parts of our body. And we're starting our day in the service of the Creator. After we've washed our hands, alternating three times on each hand, one relieves himself and makes the blessing of Asher Yotzar. After one relieves himself, he washes again, makes the blessing on the Tilat Yadayim, and he's ready for prayer. Okay, he's got to get dressed. But our sages instituted 15 blessings when you wake up in the morning, thanking Hashem for things that exist in nature. You open your eyes, if your hands are clean and you don't need to relieve yourself, you can make a blessing. Pokeach Ivrim, Hashem gave the capacity to see. You stretch out, you stand up, Matira Surim, wow, Hashem freed us of bondage. You put your feet on the floor, Rokah Haaretz Alamayim, God gave us solid earth to stand on. Right? You put on clothing, Malbisha Arumim, you bless Hashem for dressing us. You now your rooster's crowing because you got up way before the crack of dawn. But when you finally hear that rooster crow, so then, Asher Natan LaSechvi Vina, thank God I have an alarm clock, I can wake up before him, right? We have the rooster who can wake us in the morning. So we make our blessings. You put on your hat, Oter Yisrael B'Tifara, or your tefillin. You put on your sash, or your talit, Ozer Yisrael B'Gvura, Hashem gave Israel might. So we have the blessings of the morning. I don't know what's about you, but before I have my cup of coffee in the morning, I thank the Ribbono Shel Olam, Hama'avir Sheina Me'einai. Hashem has passed sleep from my eyes, Utnuma Me'af Apai, and I'm no longer sleepy. Now Hashem, give me strength, may I do your will during this day. We make the blessing, Hanoten La'ef Koach. Hashem gives those who are tired, He gives them strength. So, we have the 15 blessings we make in the morning that are basic blessings over life, right? As we just described, our capacity to see, the fact that we're Jewish, the fact that we're given the benefits of being free men, etc. Okay, so those are 15 blessings. Next, or before that, we're going to make a blessing on learning Torah. All of those are blessings that aren't really a part of prayer. They're blessings that are a part of starting our day. Washing our hands, Asher Yotzar, Elokai Neshamash Natatabi, the blessing on learning Torah, the blessing on the capacity to see, to stand, to sit, to clothe ourselves, etc. Those are all blessings of life. Okay, so that's even if you wake up at 4 in the morning, you can make those blessings, you're not yet going to pray. Now, you come to shul, technically, you put on your talit, you make a blessing on putting talit, you put on your tefillin, you make your blessings on tefillin, you wash your hands again, and now you're ready for prayer. So prayer begins with Shmona Esrei. Shmona Esrei is prayer. So our sages said, no, don't rush into Shmona Esrei. Don't begin with Shmona Esrei, even though that is prayer. Our sages say it's more proper to align the Kriya Shema, which is a biblical, we have a biblical obligation to say Shema every day, align that with your prayer. Then our sages said, wait, don't just say Shema in prayer. We're going to institute blessings around the Shema. So we have two blessings before Shema. The first blessing connects to Shema. What are you going to say in Shema? You're going to say, Hashem is one. Really? Really? Hashem is one? Yeah. You guys know that, yes? Everyone should know that. But we live in a world where there's good and bad, yin and yang, black and white, darkness and light. Yes? Certainly seems to be opposing forces. So our sages instituted a blessing. Blessed are you, Hashem, who created light, who created dark, good and bad, everything is your creation. First, we have one blessing that speaks about the unity of Hashem in all the forces of the world. So that's the first blessing before Shema. Then we have a blessing that speaks about Hashem's great love that He gave us Torah. Ava Rabba. Okay, we're about to speak about how we love Hashem. Our sages instituted before that a blessing about how Hashem loves us and gave us the Torah, gave us the way of life. Okay, after Shema, we have another blessing that speaks about how Hashem is with us at all times. He's always our helping hand, and that leads us from Shema into Shmoneh Esrei. So we said, the real prayer is Shmoneh Esrei. That's where you're asking Hashem for your needs. Technically, Shmoneh Esrei is prayer. But our sages said, do your biblical mitzvah of saying Shema connected to prayer. And then they put an encasing, two blessings before Shema and one blessing after Shema that combine with prayer. Then our sages said, wait a second. You're going to just run into shul, and this is the way it used to look like, with Baruch Hu. You walk into shul, Baruch Hu, everyone blesses Hashem, and you run into Shema and Shmoneh Esrei, finished. No, you want to come close to Hashem. You got to rejuvenate the connection. Any of you dating yet? Don't tell me. But if any of you are dating, you know what it's like. You date a girl, it goes nicely, and then you come three days later to the next date, and it's like you're starting all over again. But we built something last date, and now we have to start from scratch. So you do small talk, and slowly you build the connection again, and you work your way up. So our sages said, we want you to enter prayer, that connection with Hashem. You can't just do it with a bang. You walk into shul, Shema and Shmoneh Esrei. It doesn't work. So they said, let's build up. Let's remind ourselves of our connection to Hashem. So they instituted for us psalms. Before Shema and before the blessings of Shema, we have psalms. And that's called Psukei de Zimra, verses of song. They're supposed to arouse us to prayer. So in Psukei de Zimra, what do we say? Hashem matir asurim, somech noflim, rofei cholim. Hashem helps all those in need, those in bondage, those who are ill. We remind ourselves that Hashem took us out of Egypt. We remind ourselves of our connection to Hashem. And that leads us into Shema. And our sages instituted a blessing before those psalms and after those psalms. So Baruch Shamar introduces Psukei Zimra and Yishtabach concludes them. Let's say I show up late to Shul. So then I skip Psukei Zimra because we said the main prayer is the blessings of Shema, and then Shmoneh Esrei. So technically we could skip Psukei Zimra, but then I won't say Yishtabach, right? Because we said Yishtabach is the after blessing for Psukei Zimra. Where does Baruch Shamar come from? Does anyone know? Does anyone know? Okay, Baruch Shamar, our tradition is, the sages were thinking of instituting a blessing, and a note fell from heaven with Baruch Shamar written on it, signed by Hashem. What's Hashem's signature? Emet. The rabbis were sitting, convening, trying to figure out what blessing they should make, and suddenly a piece of parchment came floating down with Baruch Shamar written on, signed Emet. I wasn't there. But that's a tradition we have. That's where Baruch Shamar comes from. That's a powerful blessing. Okay, so we have Baruch Shamar, then we have Psalms, then we have Yishtabach. That's one unit that's introductory to the next unit, which are the blessings of Shema and Shema, which is introductory to, not introductory, but adjacent to Shmoneh Esrei. That's prayer in a nutshell. And then we have the after prayers. So we throw ourselves down. Our sages say this is one of the most potent blessings. The Tachanun, after prayer. You guys know the story, Rabbi Gamliel? What? Story? Okay. Seder. We have a great sage named Rabban Gamliel. Okay? He is a very young prince, and he's leading the Jewish people after the destruction of the temple. We have two very old sages. One is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. The other is Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya. They are both the teachers of Rabbi Akiva. And they are both the students who carried the stretcher of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. You guys know the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the prince during the period of the destruction of the Second Temple. And he kept telling them, stop fighting the Romans, you don't stand a chance. God isn't with you. He doesn't want you to fight the Romans. Give in. And so the Romans knew he was on their side. But the rebels were ready to kill him if he would overtly say that. So he feigned his death. He faked the death. And then they put a carcass in the coffin with him. So it really smelled like a dead body. And they said, we have to take him out for burial. And then his two students, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, they carried the coffin on their shoulder, and they took the body out. And then, ostensibly, they were taking it out for burial. And then they ran to the Roman side. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai actually was able to get some kind of treaty with the Roman Caesar and salvage something from the destruction. So that's a great Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. His two disciples were Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Now, the temple's destroyed, and we have a young prince named Rabban Gamliel. And Rabban Gamliel is demoted for a period. because the rabbis are upset at the way he's treating the old Rabbi Yoshua. But everyone agrees he should be the leader of the Jewish people. And then there's an argument. They bring in an oven called Tanur Shel Achnai, the oven of the serpent, the oven of the snake. Achnai is a type of snake. Basically, you guys want the full story or the short story?
Full story.
Okay. Technically, whenever something's attached to the ground, it cannot become spiritually defiled. It cannot become tameh. Exception being an earthenware oven. An earthenware oven was basically built like a teepee. Built like a triangle, okay? Floor and two sides. You had a big fire inside, and pots were placed on top, and pitot were attached on the inside, and it took great skill to know how to unattach, to detach those pitas without having them fall into the fire, without having them fall apart, and take them out and eat them, yeah? But this was done. This was like a skill, but it was done. And they'd attach pitas on the outside also, and the oven was attached to the ground to retain heat. It had a very high heat. Now, an oven, even though it's attached to the ground, can become tamei, can become spiritually defiled. If it becomes spiritually defiled, you have to break it. So imagine, let's ignore the fact that it's in the form of a triangle. We'll imagine a long barrel, just to make it easier to discuss. Okay? Even though technically it was wider on bottom and thinner on top. You have a long barrel. You cut the barrel in half. The barrel is standing lengthwise. Fire on bottom, pot on top, the barrel became tamei, you cut it in half. We're imagining a barrel instead of an oven, just to make it easier to discuss. What do you end up having? Two smaller barrels, right? So they're both usable as ovens. So our sage just said, when you break an earthenware oven, what we say is you break it, and the bigger half is still usable. You have to break the bigger half in two also. So then you end up with three pieces of an oven. What happens if you say, fine, I broke my oven, now it's pure? Now, I'll put the pieces like a jigsaw puzzle, and I'll put tar all around it, and now I have an oven all over again, only now it's not defiled. So the rabbi said, doesn't work, goes back to its old defilement. So one wise aleck figured out a new way. He said, fine, I won't do that. He took layer, bottom layer, and then he put sand all around it, and then he put layer two, and then he put tar, and he closed it, and he said, I didn't rebuild the puzzle. It's a new oven because I have sand in between each layer. And then on top of layer two, he put more sand. And then he put layer three. And again, he put tar all around it on outside. Came to the rabbis and said, rabbis, tell me, is this a kosher oven or not? I didn't rebuild the old oven. I put sand. I never reattached the puzzle pieces. Is it pure or defiled? Along comes Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus and says, it's pure. It's kosher. You could go use it. So he went and used it. And then the rabbis heard about this. And they convened. And they said, defiled. So Rabbi Eliezer said, if I am right, then the tree that's standing here will jump 50 feet back. So the tree took a 50 feet jump back. So Rabbi Gamliel said, we don't prove halachas from trees. He said, if I'm right, the stream that's flowing near the Beis Medrash will flow backwards. The stream started flowing backwards. Rabbi Gamliel said, we don't prove halacha from streams. He said, if I'm right, then the walls of the academy will cave in on us. The walls started caving in. Rabbi Yeshua stood up on his feet and he said, stop it. So the walls froze. So a heavenly voice came out and said, why are you arguing with him? He's right. So Rabbi Gamliel said, but God, you told us to rule halacha based on our understanding. Lo bashamayimi, you told Joshua, when he started asking you what the halacha is, you said, I'm not telling you, Joshua. Torah is no longer in heaven. I have no more Torah to give you from heaven. You taught us that we are supposed to work with our system and our understanding. Well, we convened as a court, and we don't agree with Rabbi Eliezer. So we have to go with the way you taught us to rule. And the courts then decided that Rabbi Eliezer went too far, and they put him in halachic ostracism, what's called nidui cherem. So Rabbi, no one would step within his four footsteps. Now, he was probably the biggest rabbi of the time. So he went home. And he wasn't there when they ostracized him. And when one of the students went to tell him, so there's a whole story about natural disasters that happened when he heard it. He was upset and all kinds of things happened. But his wife was the sister of the prince, Rabbi Gamliel. So she was very concerned. Look, her husband's a miracle worker. He's a tremendous rabbi. And by the way, Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus did not know how to say Shema Yisrael at age 28. Okay, at age 28, he didn't know how to finish the Pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. He was a big chozer b'tshuva, okay? He didn't know. You guys are well ahead of him. He started at a very old age. He started learning Torah, but look at where he got to. And Rav Elazar ben Hyrcanus comes home, and his wife, who is a descendant of King David, because she's from the prince's family, her brother is Rav Gamliel, his wife is very concerned that every time her husband davens, her brother might drop dead. Like he really upset her. And we have a tradition that even though different gates in heaven can seal shut, one gate that doesn't seal shut is the gate of Ona'ah, when a person says something hurtful to someone else. That's in this week's parsha. We're not allowed to say something hurtful. So every time her husband would finish Shmoneh Esrei, before he could do Tachnun, before he could throw himself down, remember he's davening at home, he's not allowed into shul because they ostracized him, she'd run in and say, "Honey, could you help me take this down from the shelf?" Next day he's finished Shmoneh Esrei, "Honey, I have a halachic question for you." Every day she found another excuse to disrupt his tefillah. Why? Because she knew that if he goes from Shmoneh Esrei into Tachanun, her brother might drop dead. One day, she thought it was Rosh Chodesh. She thought Rosh Chodesh was 2 days. So on Rosh Chodesh, she didn't have to bother him. She sat back. She was doing whatever she was doing. And suddenly she sees him in the other room, going from Shmoneh Esrei down to Tachanun. She says, "Oh, it's not Rosh Chodesh? Wait a second." She runs into the room and she doesn't have it. She hasn't prepared any topic to ask him. So she says, "You want to kill my brother?" But it was too late. They already blew the trumpet. In those days when a prince would die, they'd blow the trumpet. Everyone heard it. And they already blew the trumpet. Her brother was dead. So from that Gemara, we see the potency of Tachanun. Right after Shmoneh Esrei, without talking, without having a break in between, we go down and say Tachanun. We ask Hashem, "Tsar li me'od, I am in such pain. Please, Hashem, help me." And that prayer is very potent. And then we conclude with Ashrei, because you're supposed to say Ashrei 3 times a day, 2 in Shachrit and 1 in Mincha, Ashrei uval etzion, and Aleinu. Aleinu, by the way, is one of the most potent prayers also. Aleinu is one of the most ancient prayers we have. Who compiled Aleinu?
Yeshua.
Right, Joshua. When he entered the land of Israel, Yeshua ben Nun saw all the pagans and said, "We have to thank Hashem that we're not like that." So that's the prayer of Aleinu. And then we say Shir Shal Yom, which might be biblical, to recount that today is this day of the week, this day away from Shabbos. And that's our prayer in a nutshell. That's prayer. I did not address the whole idea of Korbanot. So let's quickly recap. We said, we have the blessings of the morning. That's not really prayer. It's just thanking Hashem. We have the blessing on learning Torah, blessing on washing our hands. Elokai neshama, we thank Hashem for giving us life. Then we come to shul. We put on our talit, filin with their blessings. Baruch shamar, which is an introductory blessing to Psukei Zimra, the psalms that are supposed to bring us closer to Hashem. Yishtabach, which is the concluding blessing for those psalms. If you have to skip all of that because you're late to shul, then you don't say Baruch Shamar or Yishtabach. You could say Baruch Shamar, Ashrei, and Yishtabach. That's the minimum you could say. But if you don't have the time for that, then you skip straight after you put on your talit and filin. You say the blessings and Shema. Yotzer Oro v'Rechoshech. We said those two blessings. The first blessing connects us to the idea that yin and yang, black and white, darkness and light, good and bad, they all come from Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. The second blessing, Ava Rabba, is a blessing about Hashem's love for us and giving us the Torah, which leads us into Shema, which speaks about our love for Hashem, our connection to Hashem, our responsibility to Hashem. Then we have the blessing after Shema, which speaks about how Hashem runs the world and He's the one that helps everyone in all circumstances, up to the final blessing, Baruch Hashem Gal Yisrael, blessed are you Hashem who redeemed Israel, leads us into Shmoneh Esrei. After Shmoneh Esrei, we said we go into Tachanun, which is a very potent prayer. We say Ashrei in order to complete 3 times a day. Ashrei, Uval Etzion. And then we have the song of the day, which according to some opinions, just saying Ayom Yom Shishi B'Shabbat is a biblical mitzvah. And Aleinu, which we discussed, Yeshua compiled. Aleinu and the importance of that prayer.